get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the Snake Pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the Snake Pit, Snake.
Brought to you by
Twin Peaks.
All right, Jay, thank you very much. So I've been amazed ever since I was a little kid. And, you know, we have, all of us had some sort of elementary school where drug propaganda was hard and heavy. Especially growing up in the era of the war on drugs and things like that, where
Dare,
yeah. It was, I mean, a lot. Like, probably twice a semester, it seemed like, in elementary school, we would have some sort of assembly, and you would gather, and you would talk about these things, and, you know, inevitably, marijuana would get brought up. But really, the thing that scared me the most as a kid, and it was an epidemic, obviously, and you learned about that on the news, was cocaine and freebasing cocaine and things like that. And then it hit home for most of us in the mid-80s when what's-his-butt died from the Celtics.
Len Bias,
yeah, right before he, as the number one pick in the draft.
Cocaine, I believe, in moderation.
Tombstone says, what's-his-butt?
With the first pick in the NBA draft, the Boston Celtics select... what's his butt?
And that was like, whoa. And then you learned that the whole Villanova team was on cocaine when they beat Georgetown, and that was the cover of Sports Illustrated. It's like, how could you do this? Wow. So
people were shooting marijuana.
Yeah, all over the place, left
cocaine
and right.
A hell of a drug.
And then I watched, as a kid in the early 80s, Live on the Sunset Strip, the comedy album. That was on, I think it was on HBO. I don't know if you guys watched this as kids. Great family entertainment from Richard Pryor.
Doesn't ring a bell. Obviously, we saw plenty of Richard Pryor, but I don't remember that title.
Well, Live on the Sunset Strip may have been maybe his most famous, probably because it was on cable and it was one of the first big comedy shows on cable. And he was talking about, because Richard Pryor, for those who don't know, one of the most famous stand-up comedians, actors, whatever, of all time, died at a young age. He had many, many problems with drugs, and one of them in the 70s and 80s was crack, and more specific, freebasing cocaine. And this is him telling the story of him and his pipe as they were locked in a room together.
One time it looked like I had an appendage on my hand was a pipe. Because this pipe used to tell me when to go to bed. Pipe would say, time to get up. Time for some smoke, Rich. Come on now, we're not going to do anything today. F*** all your appointments. Me and you just going to hang out in this room together. Listen. And I'd get mad and frustrated. People didn't understand me. The pipe say, come on in the room with me. I got you covered. I know how you feel, Rich. I understand. Just light me up. Hold me for a couple of days and we'll talk it over. I'm talking about a year later, Jack. I'm talking about... I'm drawn up, f***ed up, and out of my mind. But I'm not hooked. And people trying to help me, I say, you're just meddling in my motherfucking business. You just think because I'm having a good, leave me the fuck alone. And I'm smoking my, because my pipe would say, I understand, Rich, they don't know. It's your life, why they don't have a right to fuck with you. Where were they when you needed them? Come on in here with me, because I love you.
So it amazed me that Richard Pryor not only survived a year holed up in his room on a $600 a day cocaine and freebasing habit a day. This was in the 80s. He came out of it on the other side and was able to be a normal human being.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how jacked up people were on cocaine and able to function. I guess he wasn't functioning. He was locked up in his own room. But the fact that he survived that amazed me. And the fact that he went through that amazed me. And fast forward to now, one of my favorite comedians is John Mulaney. John Mulaney, for those who don't know, was one of the head writers on Saturday Night Live back in the mid-aughts. He's about 40 years old now. Mulaney is now one of the biggest stand-up comedians going.
Right.
He's hosted SNL a handful of times.
Yeah. I think he's brilliant. I think he is so, so smart. And, you know, the stuff that he wrote on SNL combined with his stand-up, he's one of my favorite comedians.
Is he still with Olivia Munn?
He is. They had a kid together. Just had a baby together. And he now is clean after a much publicized battle with cocaine and other drugs. So his latest stand-up special, and again, this falls into the category of how did you do that? How are you not dead? How were you able to not only fight through this addiction, but live while you were doing it and thrive?
Yeah, and somehow not torpedo your entire life.
Right, or kill yourself. And so here he is in his latest stand-up. I watched this over the weekend. I'm laughing my ass off, but my mouth is wide open the whole time like, how? He checks into rehab, and this is what happened.
If anyone here has ever been to rehab, you probably know this, but you are not allowed to bring drugs in with you. I don't know if you all recall my first errand of the evening before my intervention, but I leave that intervention for rehab. I have a lot of narcotics on me. So back then, I was addicted to cocaine, Adderall, Xanax, Klonopin, and Percocet. I leave for rehab, I have on my person a full baggie of 30 milligram Adderall, a full baggie of Xanax, 3 grams of cocaine, and $2,000 in cash. I had other plans that weekend. So I get to rehab at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I walk up to the intake desk. And at the intake desk, the woman says, "Do you have any drugs on you?" And I said, "No, I do not. May I please go to the bathroom?" Two guys grab me. They take my winter coat off me. They start going through the pockets. They go through the inside zipper pocket of my winter coat. I was like, how did they find out about the inside zipper pocket? That pocket has eluded everyone in my life. They reach in there, they pull out all these pills and all this cash and 2 grams of coke. Oh, remember I said I had 3 grams? Well, I did a bunch in the car. And I did a bunch at a gas station in the bathroom off of one of those koala baby changing stations. What? That's what those are for. You think you're supposed to put a human baby on that mousetrap of a device? They have gang signs carved into them. Those are for snorting coke off of. When you're a cokehead, you see the world in terms of surfaces.
All right, you can stop it there. So just the fact that this guy, who is super successful, crazy, off the charts, anybody in his world of comedy would kill and die to be there. And here he is, the amount of things that he was addicted to, his whole life, every day, was based on getting as effed up as humanly possible, as much as the body would allow.
Yeah, and it sounds very Elvis-like, because he has the uppers and the downers.
Yeah.
That he's amped on cocaine and Adderall, and then he needs to chill out with the Xanax and the Klonopin.
Yes, 100%. It's really, really weird. So we'll skip the second cut. I want to go to the third one. So this guy is so messed up on a daily basis. And again, he's a millionaire. Like, he can afford this, but eventually it's going to come crashing down on him. And he's, like, he was doing stand-up specials that are now on Netflix. You can go back and watch them, because he is messed up out of his mind. It's like Robin Williams used to be. You know, you watch those old stand-up, yeah, and he's so coked out of his head in front of thousands of people doing stand-up and doing it perfectly. So he was so messed up, and he wanted to quit doing it, that he called his accountant. And he told his accountant, stop giving me money. Unless I send you an email with my doctor attached to it, that's the only way you're allowed to give me money. And he said he immediately hung up the phone and said, I made a terrible mistake. So then he spent the next 6 months trying to figure out a way, how to get around what he told his accountant and steal money from himself. And so his idea, this is, addiction is wild, man. His idea was, I still had a credit card, so I'm going to take this credit card and I'm going to go buy a Rolex. And then I'm going to immediately sell the Rolex to get cocaine. So
at an incredible loss.
Yes, to lose money. So here is that story of him jacked up going into a Rolex store trying to get money, trying to steal money from himself.
I walk into the store and I walked up to the first display case I saw and I went, that one, hi, that one, I love that watch. I want that watch, please. The salesman turns around, he has a handkerchief already, like he's a magician. He goes, ah, I see you're looking at the rose gold watch. Would you like to see any other timepieces? I go, no, I'm not interested in timepieces, just watches. That's the one I want. I already researched it, I know everything about it. Give me the watch, please. He opens the display case, he takes the watch out. It's on its own little, like, suede bed, you know? And he goes, shall we try it on your wrist? I go, no time, no need. It's not for me. It's a gift for my brother. And I know his wrist so well. You know when your brothers, you look over, and we shared a room, I'd see his wrist. So I know it's going to be perfect. He goes, ah, a gift for your brother. And tell me, what rings does your brother wear? I go, what? Is this some kind of riddle? Is this the initiation to some Yale white people society? What do you mean, what kind of rings does my brother wear? He goes, well, if your brother wears rings of yellow or white gold, you may not want a rose gold watch. As you may know, you should never mix metals. I go, first off, I'm insulted you only think I might know that. I definitely know that, as well as all other facts. I wouldn't put an aluminum can next to a tea kettle. I wouldn't put a trumpet on a radiator. I call me old fashioned, but I believe in the strict segregation. You heard me. Segregation of metals within the home. Secondly, my brother has no rings, and he never will. He never will. My brother, oh, he has no fingers. He has a stump. He has a stump of a hand. That's what the watch is for, don't you see? The watch will adorn the stump so that when he looks down at this foul thing, he will see the beautiful watch and he will think only of the generosity of his little brother and not the horrible Vitamix accident that claimed his digits. Sell me the watch, please.
So he sells the watch for 12,000, or he buys the watch for 12,000, goes straight to the pawn shop, says to the pawn shop guy, I've had this watch forever. I just want to get rid of it. Well, he didn't realize that the guy had written a note about just buying it 5 minutes earlier, and it was for his brother and all that. And he was like, oh, really? 5 minutes? Or you bought this 5 minutes ago? He's like, just what do I get for this? He ends up giving him $6,000 for the $12,000 watch he just bought. Jeez. And he goes and buys all the coke right then.
Wow.
Dude, it's, again, you don't realize the depths of addiction and what people will do. And as he said, he goes, that's the story that I could tell you of how desperate I was. The other ones are, I can't tell anyone.
About mouth stuff?
Yes, they're so shameful. And this is one of the most successful people on the planet.
What do you mean by that, Dave?
What's the most you've ever spent on cocaine, Corbin?
Oh, geez, Dave. It's tens of dollars. It's great though, man. If like
people
all these
just
guys,
give it to him.
Yeah, all these guys that go through these really hardcore runs of hardcore drugs, it's almost like prison. It's a world that we don't understand, but it fascinates me.
Sure.
All at once, you know. But this is called Baby J. I can't remember the name of it, but it's on Netflix. It's John Mulaney, and it is a wild ride through his addiction.